I said that we would get into the chart that a fellow member in Wisconsin has prepared for us and distributed. And we're going to get to that. There have been other topics that I felt took priority over this, but so now we're going to get into that. And the nice thing is that there are more topics that we can get into, and you can try to line them up in order to continue to teach God's truth here as we move along as God's people. So we're going to talk about the subject of the beast in a little bit different way than I've ever heard it discussed before. So as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about can you find indications of the beast throughout the history of the world? And the bottom line is you can, and the Bible chronicles some of the manifestations of the beast. And we're going to talk about manifestations of the beast in the book of Genesis. So I felt it would be an interesting beginning. We'd begin at the beginning, and I think you'll find it hopefully profitable. So as you look at the subject of the beast, one thing that I came to see is that the beast is not just a subject that you find in the book of Daniel or the book of Revelation. It's a subject that is found from the beginning of God's word all the way to the end. And as you look at the book of Genesis, you find that the beast is mentioned to a degree. It's not direct. It doesn't say beast. I mean, it talks about God creating the beast of the field. But when he's talking about the beast of the field, he's not talking about the beast that is the prophetic manifestation that will take place in this world. So, anyway, as you look at the beast, where is the first place in the Bible where you might find the beast in the mentioned? Now, I'll answer that. But if anybody has an idea, let me know where you think that you would find the beast mentioned in the book of Genesis for the first time. Okay, well, if you look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, in my looking at the question, Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 is the first reference, in my opinion, to the beast. So it doesn't say beast, but the beast is an attitude, a mindset, a reflection of an evil character we know as Satan. And so you find in Genesis 1:2 a manifestation of this evil that is going to play out, has played out through history, and is going to play out at the end of the age. Why would I say that? Refer to Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 as the first manifestation of the beast. Well, the reason is, as you look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, you're just looking at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, God created everything, as it says in Genesis 1, and it was all good, all of it. That's how God creates things. And then in Genesis 1, 2, you find a very different picture. And as the world looks at what's happening in Genesis chapter 1, they just think that this is the way the world was, but it's not the way it was. It was not that way originally. So something has had to have taken place between Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. So it doesn't tell us what happened. But it just tells us that here is the earth. And if you look at the words that are mentioned there, they're the words tohu and bohu. Those of you who have been around the church a long time, you're familiar with those words. And they mean chaos and confusion, darkness. And as you look at the the Genesis 1 verse 2, you've got these raging seas and darkness, and it's just not a place that would be habitable. Nobody could live there. You couldn't have the, humans live there. The beasts can't live there. The flora can't exist there. Nothing that is living can live there. It's been wiped out. And and this is the result of we've always seen it as the result of Satan's rebellion. We know that Satan decided that he did not like the way God ran things, and he sought to overthrow God. So there he went in order to try to overthrow God. And as you look at things historically speaking, Satan has constantly sought to undermine God and his work, and he's going to do that right on up to the very end of the age. What's the first thing he does when he gets out of jail in Genesis chapter 20? Not Genesis, but Revelation chapter 20. What's he going to do? He's going to start a revolution. He's going to try to overthrow God. That's just his that's just his mode of operation, always. I mean, what's his goal right here and now? His goal is to destroy God's people. First and foremost, to thwart God's plan and to overthrow God's people. So that's been his plan from the get-go. And so he's been quite successful. And as you look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, just different issue. If you look at different translations of that verse, you find different approaches to explain it, different words and different emphasis on words. For instance, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, in the New King James, it's the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. That's the condition of the world. It's a negative, dark condition. However, the good news is also contained in verse 2, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. God was there. God was present. And God was there because he was going to continue forward with his plan. You look at what the contemporary English version says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. It says, the earth was barren and with no form of life. It was under a roaring ocean covered with darkness. That doesn't sound like a nice place to live. The today's English version says the earth was formless and desolate. The raging ocean that covered everything was engulfed in total darkness. And finally, the New Century Version says the earth was empty and had no form. Darkness covered the ocean. So you have darkness, it's desolate, you have raging storms going on, and no life can live there, exist there. And God's spirit is there. God is still there. God has allowed this to happen, and he makes note of it, and he's going to share it with his people. Okay, this is what happened between verse 1 and verse 2. And then God moves on with his creation. So God was not absent, as I said. You can see that an indication that God's spirit was there. And as you think about God as a creator, what kind of world would you expect God to create? What kind of world would you expect? Would you expect a world of chaos and confusion and darkness? I don't think that's what we would expect from what we've come to know about God. And that's not a manifestation of God's creative abilities. So if you look in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, a verse that we're quite familiar with, there it says, when God saw everything that he had made, and this is later, this is after the recreation has gone on, and God saw everything that he had made, And indeed, it was good, very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So by the sixth day, everything is back in order. And God said, it's very good. He's created the animals, the plants, the established the atmosphere. Everything has been put back in order. And God has created an environment in which he could place the pinnacle of his creation, Adam and Eve, and move forward with what he wants to accomplish in bringing many sons to glory. So then you can also look at Genesis 45, verse 18. Genesis 45, verse 18, which also talks about God as a creator. And the approach that God has as far as creation is concerned. Genesis 45, verse 18. There in that verse, it says, "For thus says the Lord, who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth and made it, who has established it, who did not create it in vain." I mean, if you look at Genesis 1, verse 2, you would have to say God created it in vain. It was uninhabitable. But that's not the way God originally created it. And God created it, and it was very good in Genesis 1:1. And after the recreation, it was very good by the time you get to Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. As you look at Psalm 19, verse 1, it gives us another indication about God's creative ability. Psalm 19, verse 1. In that verse, it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork." So God, as a creator, is shown in his handiwork. You can see it, and you can say, what a fabulous creation this is. What a great God we have to have created something so awesome, so ordered, so beautiful. And God created it that way and intended it that way to be a habitation for mankind and for man and God's plan throughout eternity. Today's English version says, in verse 1 of Psalm 19, it says, "How clearly the sky reveals God's glory." You know, you can't help but miss it when you look out on a sunny, cloudless day. Maybe there are clouds. You can see the clouds. You can see the sunshine. Living here in Houston, we're blessed this particular year with rain, and everything looks pretty lush. And the flowers are growing nicely. The shrubs are growing nicely. The trees are growing nicely. And that's how God intended it to be. Instead of the burning inferno we're used to and will probably be the case by August. But right now, things are lush. That's how God intended the earth to be a place that was perfect for man to live in. So how did the earth get into the condition that we find it in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2? Well, God doesn't explain it in the book of Genesis. Probably the scripture that explains it the best is something that is found all the way at the end of the Bible in the book of Revelation. So sometimes God doesn't explain it right away. And so really, as you think about Genesis 1, verse 2, you're going to have 6,000 years, basically. You're almost at the end of everything by the time the answer is coming, which is revealed in the book of Revelation. So in Revelation chapter 12, verse 7, it talks about what happened back in Genesis that caused the earth to be in the desolated condition that we find it. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 7, it talks about, "And war broke out in heaven." So war broke out in heaven. So we have And we as a church have always felt that this explains what went wrong between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. War broke out in heaven. Now, did the war originate with God? Did the war originate with God's holy, righteous angels? It did not. War was it came about as a result of Satan rebelling against God. So war broke out. I'm not sure how that unfolds with spirit beings fighting each other, but that's what it tells us happened. And before the end of the age, we're going to have another war that will break out between God's angels and Satan and the demons. And Satan and the demons will be defeated, and they will be unable to carry forward what they're wanting to accomplish. And then God will continue forward working out his plan. I mean, it talks about in Genesis 12, verse 7, Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. So you've got these angelic beings fighting it out. So you have Michael and his angels, and you have the dragon and his angels, and they're fighting. And it says in verse 9, so the great dragon, that is Satan, was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So as you look at Satan and his angels, they exist. They've existed from the time that man has been placed on this earth, and they will continue to exist until the end. And God has placed binders on them, in a sense. They've been bound, in a sense, in Tartaru, where they're restrained. They're limited in what they can do, but they've still had an impact upon the world. And as it says, they've deceived the whole world. They've deceived me and you. And until God opened our minds, we were part of that deceived world. So then in Genesis chapter 1 and verse in chapter 2, God introduces us to his creation and the pinnacle of his creation, Adam and Eve. And everything in chapters 1 and 2, as it pronounces, is very good. And then we come to Genesis chapter 3. And in Genesis chapter 3, another character is introduced. We know that character as the serpent. And that character is the force behind the beast. He is a beast. He's a dragon, you know, as it calls him. He is the beast. And although you have the different manifestations of the beast religiously and politically, and that's all going to unfold, but as you think about a beast is, you know, not a nice character. And as you look at the animal kingdom, it's dog eat dog. It's you know, you like your dog, but it came down to your dog eating or not, if you didn't feed him, you may start to look scrumptious to him. And he loves you as long as you feed him. You quit feeding him, his attitude may change. So not to run down dogs, but I'm just saying dogs get hungry, animals get hungry, and that's kind of the way that these animals described in the Bible are. They're beast. They're hungry. They're hungry for power. They're hungry for control. They're not hungry for righteousness and the goodness that God is trying to instill in the world. So we see that Satan comes on the scene. He's introduced, and God is bringing this out in order that the people of God, for whom this book is being written, would understand, look, there's this evil force in the world. There is a manifestation of it at the beginning when God started, and there's going to, and there was a manifestation as Satan came into the garden and deceived Eve, and Adam went along with it. And as a result of their sin, they got kicked out of the garden. God said, you can't live here under those conditions. So he kicked Adam and Eve out. And you think, well, wow, that's pretty radical. You know, he kicked him out of the garden. Well, why would God do such an extreme thing? Well, consider what happens next. We find that man has sinned and suffers the consequences. God said, in the day that you sin, you shall surely die. So the death penalty hung over Adam and Eve and their posterity from that time forward. And you think, well, that wasn't that bad. They just ate of the fruit. Yeah, God told them not to do that, but that just represents the overall attitude that they had, which was not pleasing to God. And so they get kicked out. What happens next? Look at Genesis chapter 4. We know it's the story of Cain and Abel. And we know that Abel was willing to follow God's instruction to bring a sacrifice at a particular time that God designated. So that's what Abel did. And Cain brought a sacrifice, but he didn't bring the sacrifice that God asked him to bring, because that sacrifice represented the Christ. It represented Christ, who would pay the price for sin. And Cain didn't see where that applied to him. He could do what he wanted, and he did. And so God upbraided him for that. He said, you know, Cain, sin lies at your door. You need to control it. But Cain never, ever got it under control, and he had terrible temper problems. And you can see exactly what happens to a child who is not corrected and who is able to do that which is right in his own eyes all the time. And eventually, you know, he came to hate his brother. And it says in Genesis 4 that they were talking. Well, it was more than talking. I feel there was a definite argument, and Cain got angry and killed his brother. So, and then Cain had to flee. Cain didn't repent. He just fled. And he was worried about somebody taking him out. So what did he do as he moved away from the garden and the rest of humanity? He built a city with walls to protect himself. That's where he went. Built a city with walls in order to protect himself from being killed. So, again, as you look at murder and that contention that was going on with Cain and Abel, That's not godly. That's the beast on display right there. Now, as you move forward to let's move forward to Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6. And look what, and we know what takes place in Genesis chapter 6. God has created mankind, and man is on the earth for about 1500 years. People live long lives, and we don't really know a whole lot about the people living in that time. And so we don't know exactly what life was like at that particular time, but as you look at the world, you find some anomalies, things that don't fit, that, well, how could they do that? And I don't have an explanation to all of it, but if you look at like the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid is truly a marvel of construction. Okay, you've got chambers, you've got it lined up in a specific way with the constellations, and it is a very sophisticated construction. But as you look at many of the other pyramids that were built, guess what? They're just piles of rubble. They're just piles of rubble. That's it. They built them up. Look at, if you look at like the Tower of Babel, basically the Tower of Babel is just a outward shell with a lot of rubble in the middle. It has nowhere near the sophistication of the Great Pyramid. And you look at those pyramids compared to the Great Pyramid, you have massive stones, precision engineering, and you see these temples that were constructed that had meaning to people, but they're just piles of rubble. You know, yes, you've got steps and all of those kinds of things, but it's nowhere near what that Great Pyramid was. So it's just interesting. I don't have the full explanation for it. Nobody does, but it just makes me wonder, was that a pre-flood construction? Because you find the construction of massive buildings that we can't duplicate the construction. I don't know. And as you look at, let's just look at Genesis 6 here a bit. Genesis chapter 6. There it says, "Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of men saw the daughters of men, and they were beautiful. And they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose." So guess who the men wanted to marry? They wanted to marry the good-looking girls. That has not changed. But that was the basis of their relationship, the good-looking girls and good-looking guys. It had nothing to do with, I'm committing to a relationship that is to last forever. It is a relationship that is between a man and woman and is to last forever. Well, they had lost sight of that a long time ago. And it was all about self and personal gratification, and they did not see the bigger picture. And as it goes on here, and God says in verse 4, he said that he wasn't going to strive with man. Not going to strive with man forever. And he said that there's a deadline on this. You guys are either going to get it together or things are going to go badly here in 120 years. And they never got it together. And in 120 years, the flood came. And think about this. And it says in verse 4, there were giants on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men. So were there giants? Yes, there were. There were giants. Oh, we can find evidence of that in the fossil record. We can find giants that were existed in the that were humans. However, that's not just the only way that you could look at the word giant. These were people, these were men that were considered outstanding, people that were the legends, like a Hercules or Achilles, or they're legends that were bigger than life. And that's what you had with some of these individuals that are being referred to here. They were giants, not maybe physically, but also in the things that they accomplished. And so you had these things going on, and it, the world was filled with wickedness, and God said, this is it. And as you think about the coming end of the age, when the beast is in control, what do you think is going to happen as we come to the end of the age? The very same thing that you see unfolding in Genesis chapter 6. Because see, the beast is going to try to control the world. The beast is going to be seeking to defy God and do exactly what he wants. And basically, the world as it goes along with him is going to be headed toward destruction, just like the pre-flood world. And if it weren't for God's intervention, there would be no flesh saved alive. That's what the ultimate outcome of the beast model is. There's a time when it all goes well and it's impressive, But like all human kingdoms, they decay, they break down, and they go to dust. And that's what's going to happen at the end of the age as well. You're not going to change your pattern. So anyway, God looked down and said, this is not good. And God said, I'm going to wipe mankind out, but I'm going to preserve some of my people. And God points this out in Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. There he says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. This is the same instruction that God gave to Adam and Eve. So with all of humanity having been wiped out in the flood, then those people that survived, God said, I'm going to, through you, cause the earth to be filled once again. So then man is given another opportunity. And so God said, okay, I'm going to give you another shot here. Let's see what happens. And as you think, this is the sad story. You look at and we were talking about this before we began the study. This is just my opinion. But I think that as a nation, as a people, we've been given another chance. This is it. This is our last chance. As you know, we've all come have an understanding of Israel, and we understand that God's working out his plan with Israel. And God said, has said eventually to Judah, he said eventually to Israel, and he's going to say to the descendants of Israel, enough. I've given you every opportunity to get it together, and you haven't. And then he's just going to allow it to go the way it naturally goes, which is not going to be a good result. So as you look at man, he's given another opportunity here. So what does he do? What does he do? And we can begin to see this in Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10. And as it's talking about the various nations there, I mean, in Genesis 10, it talks about the 70 nations that were, you know, developed from the people who got off the ark. And so you had these nations, these peoples, but among all of those people, there's somebody that is reflecting the beast and the way he's approaching things. And we know him as it's mentioned in verse 8. His name is Nimrod. And Nimrod in Genesis chapter 10 is a type of the beast. It says, Cush begat Nimrod, for he began to be a mighty one on the earth. Now, to become a mighty one, that's a man of renown. Somebody that's strong physically, smart, somebody that can influence people and lead them in the direction he wants them to go. And Nimrod was such a fellow. And it says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. However, he was not just a hunter of animals. He was a hunter of men, too, it seems to imply. It says, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Babel. And then there were other cities built, Erech, Akkad, and Calna, all in the land of Shinar. And so out of that came the people we know as the Assyrians. And they built Nineveh, Rehoboth, and Calah. These great kingdoms are beginning to develop. Doesn't tell us much about them, but they're developing. And this is a trend. And as you look at Nimrod, this is the beast manifesting itself. God is not involved with Nimrod. Nimrod is living defiant to God. And Nimrod is seeking to be in power and in control. And then, so he is seeking to develop his kingdom. So how does he do that? Let's go to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. And again, we see the beast is pushing forward its agenda. Satan is influencing humanity, and they are seeking to build something that is going to last. And basically, they're defying God, because what did God want? What did God tell mankind to do in Genesis chapter 10? He told them to disperse, because God did not want them to stay together, because he could see that if they stay together, it's not going to go well. It's just like for us. You know, we dispersed, but now we can go beyond the normal borders and the language barriers, the normal barriers that were there, but of boundaries of oceans and mountains and all of that. We can get past all of that. So it's easier for us to come together. And that's the direction that Satan is leading the world toward: one world, one government. And that's never been a good thing. It wasn't at the Tower of Babel. It wasn't at any point in time. But that's where Satan seeks to lead man. But the ultimate consequence of going there is man's destruction. It's not a good outcome. So anyway, let's go to Genesis chapter 11 and look at verse 1. And it says there, now the whole earth had one language and one speech. So everybody spoke the same language. Verse 2, and it came to pass that as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they built and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And if you look, it's interesting. What's their building? What are they building with? They're building with bricks. Bricks that they're clay. You can put them in a mold, and they're easy to make. And they're a commodity. You can make one after another. You can make millions of them. But you have to also realize, like they found out in Nineveh, that you can build this wonderful city with all of these mud bricks. But you know what happens when it starts raining and flooding? All of that goes back to mud. And that's what happened to Nineveh. And they became open to invasion. So they had brick for stone. Now, as you look at the pyramid, what did they build the pyramid out of? They built it out of stone. It's an engineering marvel. They built it out of stone, and the stones are massive. And there's no way that human beings, even today, can move those stones around. And, you know, you see pictures of these people with these massive stones pushing them up ramps and pulling them on sand. Yeah, you can do that to a certain extent, but they're too massive to do that on the scale that you find in the Great Pyramid. But they said, so what they did is they had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. So how are they going to hold them together? They didn't have sackcrete or any of the other building tools we had. They had to use asphalt for mortar. So the asphalt they could put it in between the bricks and hold them together. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, what did God want? God wanted them to disperse. But in having this approach, they're being defiant of God. We're not going to disperse, God. In fact, we know that you could flood us out again. So we're going to build a tower and we're going to stop you from flooding us. You're not going to be able to get us this time. And God said, well, that's an interesting thought, but you know what? I'm not going to let you get away with that. So God shuts them down and creates the inability to communicate. And so what else can they do? They all found their language group and they all headed in different directions. And the beautiful thing is that God had a plan to bring man back together, which is symbolized by Pentecost, where God inspired the speaking in tongues and allowed for man to come back together, led by his Spirit. And instead of, you know, like in Babel, working to build a city with bricks, what is God building his city with? He is building a city, but what's he building it with? He's building it with precious stones. Stones that God has formed and shaped and perfected so they go together beautifully. That's why God's working in my life and your life. He's seeking to perfect us. And so that's what God's great plan is all about. So as we go forward here, we see that God is working this out in my life and yours and preparing us to be a part of the great city of God. Now, as you go forward, the next manifestation of the beast is found in Genesis chapter 14. Genesis chapter 14. And look who's mentioned here. Genesis chapter 14, beginning in verse 14. This is in the time of Abraham. And we all know that Abraham came from around the city of Babylon. And, you know, I've heard some sermons that talk about the fact that Abraham and his father and family, they lived in Babylon, but they got crosswise, according to the story I heard, of Nimrod. And Nimrod was wanting to kill them. So they felt it best to get out of that town and move someplace where Nimrod could not get at them. So they left, and they moved to into what is modern day Iraq, and eventually down into the Promised Land. And so they moved there, but we know that there were kingdoms in the area around the Tower of Babel. And so we find in Genesis chapter 14 that the people living in Canaan were basically paying off the thugs from around Babylon, and they quit paying. So what did usually when you stop paying the amount of money that you have to pay, it happens with the mafia, it happens with whoever. If you quit paying the amount of that you are has been determined for you, then they're going to come after you. And so they stop paying. So then the folks over around the area of the Tower of Babel, it mentions them here: Amraphel, king of Shinar; Arioch, king of Elasar; Chedor Laomer, king of Elam; Tidal, king of nations; that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom; Bersha, king of Gomorrah; Shinab, king of Adma; Shomever, king of Zeboim; and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. And all these joined together, they went to war, and the kings in the Canaan were defeated. And so they not only defeated the kings that were not paying their duty, but they took some of them captive. They took all the goods that they could get together and headed back to their land. And they also took Abraham's nephew, Lot. So they headed back to their land, and Abraham was made aware of it. So he went after them and was able to meet up with them and defeat them in battle. I mean, it's hard to believe, you know, he had 318 men that were soldiers and trained. But what was that for? Basically, it wasn't that he was a warmonger. It was a matter that he was a, traitor. And when you're a traitor and you're going along some of these places, then you're vulnerable and you need people to protect all of the goods that you're transporting from where you live to someplace else to sell. You need a way to protect them. And these men were commissioned with that duty. And Abraham was a traitor. That was one of his, he wasn't just a shepherd, but he was involved in trade and was quite wealthy as a result of it. But you have this situation where these leaders stopped paying their duty. And so these kings came and got them and said, look, you're going to pay or else. And they didn't pay. So they went to war and they were defeated. Now, as you think about the end of the age, are we going to be expected to pay our duties? Think about it as a Christian. Is the beast going to expect you to honor the beast in order that you can buy and sell? And guess what? If you don't offer the right tribute, and you don't practice whatever it's going to be, the religion, you don't keep the right day, then you're going to be punished for it. And as it says, you won't be able to buy or sell. Now, that's when it's going to become deadly serious. But that's on, that's coming, and we've got to be aware of that. So Abraham went and saved his nephew Lot, and Abraham was faithful to God and offered up. Interestingly, you also find the one we know as Jesus Christ there at that time. He was the king of Salem, still is the king of Salem. So he was there, and Abraham was aware of him and offered him tribute. And then shortly after that, we find Abraham entering into a covenant with God, and that covenant came into being and still exists. And it laid, and what Abraham agreed to eventually played out with the coming of Christ and the sacrifice of Christ. All of those things were part of the dream that Abraham had there. So as you think about that, you can see that there's an attitude and a spirit behind the beast. And that attitude and spirit flows out from Satan and the demonic beings that serve him. And they seek to influence and deceive the world and thwart God's plan. And as you look at the book of Exodus, what's the next manifestation of the beast? Think about it. What's Exodus about? Isn't it about a people who went down to the land of Egypt? They came peacefully. They fit in. They were welcomed. They were prospering. But things changed. And you had a king who did not know Joseph, a king who saw the Israelites as a threat, and a king who came up with this hot idea to eradicate Israel. We'll just kill the boys. No boys, you don't have Israelite children. So we will just throw those kids into kill them and throw them in the Red Sea, throw them in the Nile. And so the thought is that there were possibly 60,000 of the children of Israel that were killed this way. We don't have a fixed number. That's just speculative. Could be. We don't know for sure, but it was enough to be an affront to God. So then you had so Israel was enslaved, and this is again as a manifestation of Satan and carnal nature And the beast, this is what the beast is. This is how the beast operates, and it's coming once again. And these different manifestations you find in the in our time or in the Bible are just telling us that this element has been a part of man's history. And the thing is, it is going to continue to be a part of man's history. And so I thought I would start in Genesis at the beginning and just kind of look at this particular topic. And you can see elements of the beast even in the book of Genesis. And you find it wherever evil reigns and conquest is the mindset of the people, and one group is subjecting another people. It's the wrong mindset which God is adamantly opposed to. So next time what we'll do is we will get into the chart that we made available to everyone. We'll talk about it and just get an overview of how the beast has manifested itself and how it's going to manifest itself here as we get to the end of the age. So hopefully that's lays a good basis for moving forward with the topic, and we'll pick up again for those who are able and would like to join next Wednesday. We'll talk about it once again, and if you have any questions you'd like me to ask or answer, then you can email me and I'll be happy to answer them for you. But anyway, that thanks everybody for joining. Hopefully you found it profitable, and you learned a little something here. So I appreciate your time, and it's an opportunity to be able to fellowship with you in this way. And so it's always enjoyable for me to do Bible study. So thanks everybody for your time, and please have a most enjoyable rest of the week.